Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the topic of God, the only cause and creator. We're so grateful you could join us today. Dear Benjamin is recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all for joining us today. We'll start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 258 of Miscellaneous Writing, and it says from page 77 of Divinity Course in General Collectanea. In the spiritual genesis of creation, all law was vested in the lawgiver, who was a law to himself. In divine science, God is one and all, and governing himself, he governs the universe. This is the law of creation. My defense is of God, which saveth the upright in heart. And that infinite mind governs all things. On this infinite principle of freedom, God named himself, I am. Animal magnetism, ignorant or malicious, you cannot separate me from God good. You cannot dim my spiritual perception. For God is all in all, the only creator of the only universe in man. We are his children, and we do realize the all fullness of the omnipotence of God. My health, strength, life, intelligence, action, etc., are subject to the governing and controlling power of the divine mind and to nothing else, for there is no power. There is no other power. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now Karen, our watching please.
Watch number 179. Watch lest you yield to the error mentioned in Joel 3, verse 5, and carry into the temple God's goodly pleasant things. Even though our pleasant things represent the harmony resulting from demonstration, they must not be carried into the church, since the church represents spiritual effort and activity. Where the watchword is from Joel 3, verse 9, prepare war. The goodly things represent the fruitage of demonstration, whereas the church represents a warfare with material sense that must continue until the warfare is ended. Thus, the thought of completion should not enter into the church, since it stands for spiritual growth. The danger from results is that they may bring self-satisfaction, which is death to progress. No child beyond the kindergarten stage is allowed to play in the schoolroom. That is the place for study. Thus, our church is the place for demonstration. If one really wants continuous progress, he would never desire nor seek to have any error removed without demonstration. Otherwise, he is not making a suitable preparation for meeting the next problem. To have a right spiritual objective means to understand that progress is overcoming rightly each error that confronts one in his path, thus giving proof of faithfulness. To sidestep an error means to step out of the struggle for the time being. Once a student of Mrs. Eddy's declared that in his early days in science, when he had a difficulty, he went so far as to pray that it would not go away except through demonstration. To him, demonstration was such a sacred and vital thing that he did not want to miss a single opportunity to use it.
Thank you. Comments on that?
First of all,
go ahead.
Well, first of all, the church, I know I've mentioned it before, but when I was a branch church member, everything was fine until I woke up to the realization of what was going, the changes that were being made. And then it was like I was in a war zone all the time. It was not pleasant. But the part about demonstration, which is I'm so grateful to what I'm learning more about what demonstration really is. It's the spiritual understanding, the growth in spiritual understanding. And with each challenge or suggestion that comes, no matter how it appears, person, place, or thing, it really is just an opportunity to demonstrate the allness of God and the nothingness of error, or what would say it is not part of God. And so we must look forward to overcoming those things. And I liked when what he said about he wanted to make a demonstration. He didn't want to have any healing until he made a demonstration over the allness of God and the nothingness of error. So I thought that was...
Yes, thank you. This reminds me of the time that Mrs. Eddy said to someone who, when she asked a gentleman, "How is your church doing?" And he was going on how wonderful it was. And she said, "That's too bad." Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Someone once told me probably one of his worst times in his life was going to a Christian Science Thanksgiving Day service. All right. Everyone got up. "Oh, I'm a 10th generation Christian Scientist. All my family is here. We're having such a wonderful time." And it rolled a stone on his heart. As this watching point brings out, it's fine to be grateful for the harmony, because there's no such thing as human harmony, but perhaps the harmony that being a Christian Scientist has given to you. But we must be very careful of what we bring into the church, what we testify about. I know in times past, even for myself, it could have, the testimony things were times of almost bragging. And that is an awful, awful thing. And I didn't know this until I came here and was taught by Mrs. Evans, who would hit you over the head if you gave a testimony like that, because it is so insensitive. What makes our testimony meetings meaningful is we talk about humbly the struggles we've had and what we've overcome. It's not bringing into the service how great I am and how wonderful my demonstration is. And as I've said, we should be grateful for the good God has given us. Quietly grateful to ourselves, but not broadcast it to everyone else. And I'm sure that most of you know exactly what I'm talking about. Hopefully you would.
Yeah. I also, at the same time, there's, because you demonstrated once before, shouldn't make us complacent.
Yes.
Because after all, progress is the law of God. And for us to progress, then we are overcoming all these challenges that come. This is what will bring us at home. Maybe we will one day ascend. But he has said, until the last error is overcome, we really cannot just be complacent.
Thank you very much. Exactly. And you see, this is what we've talked about it before, but what has happened to the movement, where people have demonstrated their wealth and their health, and then they go soundly to sleep and become very complacent. And look at the state where we're at. Now, Mrs. Eddy, through struggle and toil, she did come to a point where she demonstrated certainly supply and health, but that didn't stop her from continuing on to give the world her science, and she kept at it. And any of her wealth that she had accumulated was for progressing the cause, and that alone, not for just, you know, making herself comfortable and then falling asleep. Of course, that would never have happened to Mrs. Eddy, but it's a pitfall to many others. And it was a lesson here we have had very much ingrained in us, because we've seen what has happened to the movement. Because just of this, the purpose of Christian Science, you will become happier, healthier, perhaps wealthier, but that is not the objective. Don't think that's the objective. It is not the objective. What is the objective?
Spiritual growth.
Yes.
Destroy sin.
Yes, thank you, Linda. The healing of sin. And that we have work to do in ourselves and with others. Go ahead, Zari.
Yeah, I just wanted to say this whole thing about being having multi-generations in Christian Science, that does not add up. I really started to... The humility is really important. You can't say, well, my grandmother raised somebody from the dead a few times. So, of course, that doesn't mean that I can do that. I have to have my spiritual relationship with God and the humility to say, thank you, Father, for all the talents you give me so that I can bless you and our movement.
Thank you very much. That's exactly right. The talents that God has given us to bless ourselves and our movement. And that brings me to something, and this goes along with our lesson, God the only cause and creator, because throughout this lesson, God is saying to us, you know, you are mine. I haven't created you in vain. He has put us on this earth, all of us, everyone, without exception, for a holy mission, a holy purpose. And there's something very beautiful I found. I hope I can find it now. And it was in Timothy. 1 Timothy 4. And this is the Amplified Version of the Bible. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, that special inward endowment, which was directly imparted unto you by the Holy Spirit. Practice and cultivate and meditate upon these duties. Throw yourself wholly into them as your ministry, so that you progress, so that your progress may be secure. Look well to yourself, to your own personality. And that's perhaps speaking about what we talked about last week, to make sure you're going over your human personality always needs purifying and purging. So look into yourself every day, how you can make better progress and purge whatever is in you that is ungodlike. If you don't do this regularly, you will be forced to do it in some way. So look well to yourself and to your teaching. Persevere in these things. Hold to them. For by so doing, you will save both yourself and those who hear you. It's a beautiful passage from 1 Timothy. And each and every one of you that's listening has this purpose that God has given to you, individual. And if you think you don't have it, you know, you are in contact with people all day. And are you having a positive, godly influence on these people or not? And if you are, then you are an ambassador for the Christ and you're doing what you should. And even though maybe they're small beginnings, it will increase. It will increase what God has given you to do. That it will become more and more evident. And you will find your place, and it's a wonderful and a holy place. Now, this week, I found someone sent me a very beautiful, well, email. It was beautiful of sorts, sad in some ways. But this is what happens if you do not find your purpose and place. This is from Germany. Dear Plainfield Independent Christian Science, thank you for broadcasting your meeting. I was deeply touched by Jeremy's short testimony about hating himself and being suicidal before coming to Plainfield. Is there a written version I could read? Mortal Mind suggests aggressively that in my case of self-hatred and decades of wanting to escape this existence because it might be too hard for God to solve, and I can't cling on to any testimony that contradicts the claim. If Jeremy could elaborate on his healing, I would be most grateful. Thank you so much for all you share. Now, this is a sad situation for so many people because they have not found this holy purpose. God is our cause and He is our creator. We must turn to Him in all things and certainly for our purpose. So Jeremy compiled beautiful testimonies that he's given through the years, and I'll have him read the first one.
It's from October 15th, 2014. I've had a terrible time trying to get this testimony ready today. I'm never sure what that means, but I do know that if it reaches someone in a positive way, then it was worth it. For that moment that I asked God for help, before he brought me here, I was a complete wreck. People I had known for years thought I was confident and had it together, but that was totally false. Over the course of 20 years, I became increasingly convinced that my life meant nothing. And during that time, I felt increasingly distant from God. That is no coincidence, as I now understand. Because I felt unworthy, I sabotaged myself to make that feeling appear right. If there was a right way to eat, to live, to interact with people, I did all I could to be wrong. I actually was suicidal for much longer than I've ever admitted to anyone. And because of that, I did some foolish things. I'm saying this not to bring the mood down, but to let everyone know that if God could choose me, if he could have a purpose for me and make me worth something, then absolutely no one is unworthy. The fact that he brought me here to be useful astounds me every day, and still does. With all the work I do here, I know I'm not the only one holding it together. I'm not the one holding it together. Being surrounded by love and support and given this work is what I need to heal. So grateful for every moment of freedom that God has given me from my old life, and that what I am learning here brings honest results.
Now that is a testimony. That is a testimony. That's what our testimonies are. To reach out and help the wounded. And then goes on for a few more pages. All these testimonies that Jeremy's given through the years. And anyone that knows Jeremy now knows that he is not that person. He is not that person.
Seems very distant.
Very, very distant.
Almost like remembering an old TV show.
And that's exactly it. And that's
science fiction.
Science fiction. And that is how it should be. Because it was never true. And it does seem, you know, all these things, I know for myself too, this old Mary, you know, who was she? Nothing. Because we're all nothing without God. Absolutely nothing. Mrs. Eddy acknowledged that when she said, you know, as Mary, I'm the weakest mortal on earth. But as the founder of Christian Science, I'm the bone and sinew of the world. It's probably not a perfect quote, but it's the gist of it. So without God, we are all nothing. And we all must come to this. And this dear person that wrote this email, she will. She's found us. And she will. And I'm so grateful She's reached out lovingly a few times to me, and I'm so grateful that she has, because no one should suffer in that way.
But I might add, it's good. I have found it good for myself, because going through all of that and knowing that nothing else was able to help me, and then when I came here and this place was, let me know that this place was real. Anything else, completely incapable of doing it. So she will find the same thing, I have no doubt.
Thank you. Yes, she will. And you know what Jerry does is different from what you were called to do. Go ahead, who's speaking?
It was me, Elizabeth. I would just wanted to say that it's that tribulation in life that pushes us to that. And it's a wonderful thing, really. It's rejoicing in tribulation, which I thought the watching point was sort of addressing. You know, I'd rather not have the demonstration than have it without the realization of the learning point, so to speak. So it's really, and I feel like if when we are complacent, the more complacent that we are, the less error presses with us. So it's that tribulation that pushes us on to, you know, reaching out to God and learning what we need to learn.
Yes. And you look back, I know I look back, and it was during the tribulation and suffering that I've learned the most, and that it's been truly the best of times, because you're really reaching out. Everything in science and health, everything you read comes alive, speaking directly to you.
Yeah. Well, I think we find, you know, when you really find God, you find who you really are. And that's so, I don't know, I have no word for it, but somehow it really humbles you.
It's
learning who you really are.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Peter wrote that song.
Peter Kidd wrote a song about that.
Yeah.
And when I found God, I found me.
When I found God, I found you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is what St. Paul meant when he said, I rejoice in tribulation, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Eddy says in the textbook about trials, what does she say?
Proof of God's care.
Yeah. And once we get to where we understand what that means, then we're on the right path. We're, you know, we're on the right road. And we don't fear the tribulations so much when they come, because we know that they serve a useful purpose. And Mrs.
And did it? Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Mrs. Evans reminded us many, many times that when we are in tribulation, the right attitude is to demand the blessing. You don't crumble underneath the weight of it. You demand the blessing. And there is a blessing in every tribulation.
The only reason we have them is to purge ourselves, to separate the dross from the gold.
Well, you know, this watching point mentioned progress many times. In Science and Health, it says progress is born of experience. So we should never find ourselves at a point where we want to avoid an experience, but rather to rejoice in the fact that we have something and that God's going to guide us through it. And that's how you learn and get better, and you're ready for the next experience because you haven't avoided things. If you avoid it, you're going to have to face it again later anyway.
And as hard as it is, you know, this is what we have to do for our children. Let them learn. And, you know, sometimes in talking with people, it's almost like I can see, especially mothers, jumping in the middle, directing traffic, you know, getting between God and their child, all the, you know, and then they, big mama, telling them all, Christian Science mothers, all that they have to do and all that they've done. And please, please stop with that. God is their father and mother. And you'll do the best you can in knowing that and ferme la bouche. Just be quiet. Traffic. That's it. Exactly. If you could only hear sometimes what it sounds like to me, what you either say or what you write, it reveals a tremendous amount of what's going on. And you don't even know you're doing it, obviously, because you're telling me about it, sometimes in a prideful way, like, look what I'm doing. Well, no.
I'm not impressed.
Yeah, I'm not impressed. And, you know, I love, and I'd never heard of this. This was an article that Lawrence told me about, Spiritual Consultations, and by Rosalie Maws. And, well, first starts out with God as the great physician, but then as the companion, the Christian Scientist. And he says, the Christian Scientist is telling you, I will convince you on every plane that the disturbance you feel is not physical, not caused by the body, and not in the body. It is induced, this is a quote from Science and Health, by a false sense, mentally entertained and not destroyed. And you, if you check your thought, I know from myself, you have entertained something and not destroyed it, and now it seems to be right there in front of you, looking horrible. So get it early. And then you will cease to honor the transient testimony of a mirage of mortal mind, however real it appears, just as you have learned to disregard the false evidence that the sun rises and sets. Bow down to any so-called science which would bind you to a long history and condemn you to further decline. You will stop allowing yourself to be relegated to a sunless corner. That really makes me want to cry. How often have you felt you've been relegated to a sunless corner, sitting there in misery? Instead, you will look and walk expectantly toward the sunny realm of truth and love. And then, you may be dismayed what I bring to your attention, but it is essential to take up serpents. They may have lain undisturbed for generations. If you are harboring fear of a disease which you believe kills someone or gave someone years of suffering, I will not allow that fear to go on lurking in your thought. I will insist that you fully accept, either in a flash or little by little, that no one has ever died in the unbroken infinitude of life or been banished from the sunshine of love. And then this, I love it. I will uproot the rotten seed so that it cannot come up in your thought or experience. I will never leave you until I have led you through that valley of the shadow of death to the point where it buds and blossoms as the rose. I have heard so-called Christian Scientists tell me, well, so-and-so suffered from this, my Aunt Tilly, and, you know, the image is their thought. That is a rotten seed. You must uproot it and burn it and destroy it. No one ever died of that. God never said it. That person is held in God's love right now forever. There is no fleshly inheritance. But that is why you must not have pride about your family or shame or hold these negative images in your thought. Now, I know it's hard. If you've been a child and you've seen this stuff in your household, it's hard to get rid of that thought. But 390 to 393 in Science and Health, banish the thought, blot out the images. This is our daily work. So when those things poof, 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 just, you know, you see your mother in a wheelchair, you see this or that, you get the hell out of your thought. You have to. You cannot think of it. You do not think of her in that way. You do not think of him in that way. You hold them as God's perfect child. No fleshly inheritance. God is the only cause and creator. He created us all imperfection. And now, some of you have been watching The Chosen. Season 4 has been coming out. And this past week, I couldn't, I guess because on Thursday we had our watch was going on. But I did catch the last 5 minutes. And also something that Amanda Jenkins, Dallas's Jenkins' wife, said, which I found very interesting. Trying to find it in my notes, but anyway. They were saying that one of her favorite passages is from Ezekiel. Now, I couldn't find it in Ezekiel, but I believe it is in Romans. As I said, I can't find my notes on it, but maybe. Yes, I just did it. Thank you, Father. It's Romans 4:17. And anyway, Amanda was talking about a passage where something that seems not to exist is brought into existence. Now, and this is the Amplified Version. He, Abraham, believed in God, who gives life to the dead and calls things into existence that do not exist. Now, we as Christian Scientists know that when things are called into existence that seem not to exist, they actually do exist, don't they? They are the reality of things. So that is a very powerful statement. When people sometimes ask, how does healing occur? Well, that is how you are calling into existence what seems not to be there, but actually is. And that goes along with this statement from Science and Health, the key to the scriptures, which I think this statement is the key to much of healing. Jesus beheld in science the perfect man who appeared to him where sinning mortal man appears to mortals. And this perfect man, the Savior, saw God's own likeness. And this correct view of man healed the sick. Now, with the healing of Jeremy, I did not see him that way. I just didn't, the way he describes himself. I never saw him that way.
It was impossible.
It was impossible, yes. And that, because he was receptive, allowed him to become the man that God made. Now, I understand some people are very hard to see in this light, you know, especially if they seem to have a history or they just are obnoxious or whatever. But this is what we must do. This is all healing is. It's bringing to light what God has made and seeing past the false picture. That is our job. God is doing it all. God is the healer. No person ever, ever heals. It's only God. But in the story of Moses, what did he do? He saw the way through the Red Sea, didn't he? Even though everyone else was terrified. He saw the way. Every great healer, every great prophet, they have brought into existence what seems not to exist because they've seen the truth. Parthen sent us a while ago, Robert Frost, talking about the founding fathers seeing America, seeing the victory in the war, the Revolutionary War, and the great leaders of that time, and they were great, and they were God-inspired, and I will not have them thrown stones at. No one's perfect, but they were under God's control. No one but a God-fearing man could have accomplished these things. And they brought into existence what did not seem to exist. And Gary Parthens also said something about, what was the title of it?
Oh, an article written in 2019 entitled, "We Had Planned for Everything, but Not for Candles and Prayers."
Mm-hmm.
And the article was written by a fellow who's studied the huge change that went that happened in Eastern Europe in the late 1980s and early 1990s, when Germany was reunited, when Poland, Hungary, and many other Eastern Bloc countries were freed from the Soviet bloc. And the point of the article was, the way it happened was a total shock and surprise to the government leaders from the communist countries, certainly a shock and surprise to the Russian soldiers that occupied these countries. And it was one of the Russian, one of the government leaders that said, we plan for everything, but not for candles and prayers. And the point of the article was the importance that churches played and people praying and gathering in churches, how that had a huge, huge influence on the outcome. And we here in Plainfield were watching at that time. Part of our watch included the end of communism. And we're still working on it. But as some of you may remember, Reagan was hosting Gorbachev and encouraging Gorbachev to stop this cruel form of human government. So he goes through and he talks about there were specific churches that were able to meet, and people attended the church services who weren't religious, but the churches were the only place where people could speak freely without being punished. So people tended to gather near or in the churches. And talks about one church in Eastern Germany where the pastor was particularly outspoken during the church services, and he attracted hundreds of people. And the church services became demonstrations for freedom, peaceful demonstrations. And it's an interesting article because it was written from the standpoint of a secular society, and it gives a tremendous amount of credit to the prayers of the people who demonstrated. And when they tore down the Berlin Wall, it was totally unexpected by the Russian soldiers and so forth. But they were so overwhelmed by the number of people and the peaceful attitude of the people. They weren't coming in with guns and stuff like that. They were tearing down the wall with their bare hands. Mm-hmm. And the soldiers couldn't do anything about it. They just let it happen. And it was a huge, huge wake-up call for so many people. But the head Russian guy in East Germany, which was running the thing, said later, he said, we were prepared for these demonstrations. We were prepared for everything, but we weren't prepared for candles and prayers. And it was the spiritual message that people were carrying with them that basically allowed everything to happen, and almost every case peacefully.
And so thank you, and I thank Parthens. Also, I know dear Anne sent us about World War II in England and what happened, especially on D-Day, all the prayers that were going on. Prayers it works. You know, the so-called enemy would make us think it doesn't or not tell us about it. I mean, who knew this? There's so many things that have been conquered through prayer. Just everything, absolutely everything. Every good thing that's ever been accomplished is through prayer. Everything, without a doubt. So, but the so-called enemy wants us to get discouraged. It pulsates these negative images and division, and we hate each other. And it's all a bunch of BS, not the truth.
Later. We'll tell you later.
We all know what it is. And it would try to discourage. Go ahead.
Isn't that what Mrs. Eddy refers to as the power of the infinite unseen? The perfection of the infinite unseen and the power that it holds.
Yes.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So, and this bringing into existence what doesn't seem to be, this is how we bring in the millennium. We refuse to accept these false pictures. It's not going to be a reign of some horrible dictator. It's going to be the reign of Christ. We're just letting you know, buddy, bro, that you better get out of the way because it's happening. It's happening. And I don't care what you say or how loud you scream, your inarticulate sound will be silenced forever. Mary Baker Eddy. The time has come. Go ahead, Sari.
This brings up a lot of memories for me. I remember I had an exhibit just when the wall came down in a place called Radebeul near Dresden. And they said that my artwork was invited. This is what the East German government said, but I was not invited to come. And I decided to go. I prayed about it, and I decided to go. I tried to get a visa. They wouldn't give me a visa. This shows you how God works in mysterious ways. So I was there. The buses, something was wrong with the streetcars, the tram. So I didn't have a way back to, and I had to leave the country by midnight. Otherwise, I could risk, because it was in the period between the wall, when the wall had come down, the East Germans, Hanukkah was still in charge. And so I spoke to two men who had been at the exhibit and asked me about my artwork. And I said, I've got to get back to West Berlin. How do I do it? And they said, we are actors. We have the chance to get you back, but you have to go back in a coffin. Because we are for you know, the theater. That's how I got back to West Berlin. And I prayed the whole way because, you know, all sorts of thoughts came that were not so nice. So I had to pray without ceasing.
Oh, Sari. Sari has been a light. Sari has been a light in Germany. And they have many interesting stories, as does Benjamin in Nigeria from, he's in America now, but his stories about after 9/11 and other things have been so interesting. And as those of you in England and other strongholds we have outside of America, and certainly our Australian group, very strong there.
Well, I told one of my East German students this week because she said her daughter cannot talk. And I said, well, when I have faced such a terrible situation, I had to turn to God. And I'm here and we're talking, so it must work.
Thank you.
And it touched her.
Thank you. I know Sari goes around doing this everywhere she goes. This is what I'm saying. You know, you have each have a mission. She turns everything back to God. And most people are craving to hear that, whether they act like it or not. And you will have a huge effect on them. Chardell does it all the time with her family. She has all these boys she looks out for, her grandsons plus many more. Sends them little notes and things, and people in trouble that she talks to. So we all have our work to do, our ministry work. Just have the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it. And if you pray to God, he will bring to you those people you can help. Without a doubt, he will. Now, in the lesson, it says, Christian Science presents unfoldment, not accretion. It manifests no material growth from molecule to mind. but an impartation of the divine mind to man and the universe. Science and Health, page
68.
Now, accretion, growing, adding on to, gradual accumulation or addition from the outside. Unfoldment, to expand, to spread out, revelation, and then spiritual unfoldment is opening ourselves to happiness beyond everything we can get through worldly desires and gradual development and growth. It's very important to understand this, because in anything you do, if you're trying to add something to you, you want a house, accretion. You want a child, accretion. You want a new dress, accretion. But if you know all these things unfold from within, because the kingdom of God is within you, these things will unfold in your experience, and you'll know they're from God. So work on that and those definitions. Again, the Dear 1828 Dictionary. So
I always think of accretion as, maybe this is because I'm from New England, but if you roll a snowball down the hill, you know, it'll get bigger and bigger. But at some point, it's going to run into mud and leaves and stuff. So it's going to lose its purity.
Yes. And, you know, this is a very materially minded world, or would seem to be. And of course, all the ads are always, you need this, you want this, you got to get this. And accretion, what does God say that you need?
Right. When I think of accretion, I think of scholastic education, learning more and more things, more and more classes, building on more and more layers of human education, all of which has to be abandoned eventually. And many people, myself included, have reached the point where it's like peeling off the layers of the onions. All the things that I thought I accumulated, I got to take them off and get back to the original that's true and genuine. So much about scholastic education.
Yeah, doesn't the study say something like it needs to be abandoned as worse than useless?
Yeah.
But it also says we have a connection with God, and therefore we know everything we need. We have all we need because of our connection with Him. Genuine, original.
And I think
creating this all.
And St. Paul's walk to Damascus, it was a good example of that. Here he was, the most highly educated, you know, Pharisee in Israel, and, you know, wealthy family and all that stuff. And when he was blinded and then was restored by the Christ, he realized that all of this human education, well, in fact, he has a very good word to describe it, doesn't he?
Oh, John?
Yes.
Done, right?
Yeah. He said he counts it as done, which means he saw the worthlessness of this accumulation of human stuff, human knowledge, so-called.
There's one other point. I know that probably the bell is bonging at home, right?
Yeah, the bing.
Bing, yeah. But in Isaiah, where it says, "For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it, he hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else." That word, establish, in the 1828 Dictionary. This is what God is doing for you. He's establishing you to set and fix firmly or unalterably, to settle permanently, to settle or fix what is wavering, doubtful, or weak. Bring it home, folks. Make that yours. God is establishing you in these ways. So you think you're weak, wavering, doubtful, going here, there, and that place. No, he settles you permanently and firmly. It's a beautiful definition. Now, dear Carrie sent me the most beautiful articles which I haven't even touched on, but we will end on one. And I'm very grateful for all that she sends because they're wonderful. And she gets them from these old journals, and they're always before. She's very careful about the dates. They're early journals when the word was pure. It gets adulterated later on after the 1940s. So she's very careful in what she sends me. And it gives us a wealth of things to work with for our magazine, for a carol. So this one is by our dear friend, William McCracken. It's called Joyful Unfolding. And it's from a November 1916 edition of the journal.
And he writes, "The delicate terms and the spreading bracken unfold their fronds in springtime within the shadow of the forest. They do not fear to grow by unfoldment. The spiritually minded must permit their God-given abilities to unfold and develop under the tender protection of science, rejoicing the while that they are witnessing the real creation, the revelation to human apprehension of that which has always been." In that wonderful chapter entitled Genesis in the Christian Science textbook, the meaning of which dawns upon the comprehension of the astonished student as nothing short of a divine revelation, we read, quote, "There is but one creator and one creation. This creation consists of the unfolding of spiritual ideas and their identities, which are embraced in the infinite mind and forever reflected," end quote. Creation is not the act of making something out of nothing, but rather of unfolding that which already is. The belief in matter, space, time, physical sense, in the desires of the flesh, in personality, error, fear, hate, and death, having been steadily brushed aside by the hand of revealing truth, there will eventually remain only the transcending beauties and eternal qualities of real being. In proportion as human understanding is receptive of this revelation, does the spiritual activity of true creation go on apace. Human character unfolds like the forest fern at the touch of love's benediction. Positive truth sweeps away the negative error, and the moments of seeming darkness grow less frequent and of shorter duration as the gleams of revelation become more regular and their rays draw closer together in order to create the final effulgence of perfect understanding. Then shall not this growing time be purged of foolish repining, useless speculation, and self-pity, and become to us more and more a season of joyful unfolding. William McCracken.
Bringing into existence what seems not to exist. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.